Greetings, this is Terry Cronin from Melbourne, Florida, and as your editor-in-chief, I want to welcome you to this edition of Dialogues in Dermatology for November 2015, Volume 71, Issue 11. This is a multimedia digest prepared by the American Academy of Dermatology. Remember to download the fabulous new Dialogues in Dermatology app for your smartphone and computer. This convenient app is making dialogues even more accessible and enjoyable while effectively providing CMEs for you. In this month's edition, we have three new dialogues focusing on psoriasis. Psoriasis is a common chronic condition affecting 1-3% of the general population. Treatment options for this dermatologic condition are varied based on severity and can include topical, oral, and phototherapy. Over the past decade, our understanding of the pathophysiology of psoriasis has changed. From that of a Th1-mediated disease similar in nature to contact dermatitis, to a Th17 disease mediated primarily by IL-17 and IL-23. This change has led to the development of several new targeted therapies against these important inflammatory pathways. In this dialogue, Dr. Michael Heffernan and Dr. Kenneth Gordon give an overview on what's new in psoriasis and offer many pearls.
Today gives me great pleasure to introduce you to Ken Gordon. Ken is a professor of dermatology at the Northwestern University Feinberg School of Medicine. He's an internationally recognized expert in inflammatory skin diseases, especially in psoriasis and in the immunology of psoriasis. Welcome, Ken.
Thank you very much, Mike.
So today we're going to talk about psoriasis and what's new in psoriasis. What's new in our understanding of the pathophysiology of psoriasis?
Well, it's really interesting because our understanding of psoriasis has changed tremendously over the last 10 years. If you would have looked at review articles 10 years ago, looking at the pathophysiology of psoriasis, you'd have a model that looks like contact dermatitis. One of the fascinating things about what's happened in psoriasis is the science has gone from bedside to bench and now back to bedside. And it's made a huge difference in how we think about psoriasis. So if you think about contact dermatitis and how we think about it, the concept of anti-tumor necrosis factor alpha agents working in psoriasis doesn't really fit into that model. We had a thought of psoriasis being Th1 mediated with gamma interferon being driven by interleukin-12, standard things in contact dermatitis and Th1 reactions, and that was driving how we developed biologics for psoriasis, new medicines for psoriasis. So we had things like elefacept and eculizumab that blocked those pathways. But sort of fortuitously, people discovered that anti-TNF agents worked in psoriasis. Actually, the first time I ever heard about was a GI fellow at the University of Chicago who was working on infliximab for Crohn's disease, came home one night and said, "By the way, husband, infliximab, I had this patient with psoriasis, got better with infliximab therapy. And so I can thank my wife for getting me into psoriasis treatment." And what happened was we took that information and looked at some other findings that interleukin-23 was elevated in the skin of psoriasis, but not interleukin-12. And various signal transduction molecules were elevated. And we came up with this pathway of viewing the Th17 system and IL-17 as the primary driver of the skin changes in psoriasis. And so it was coming back and then people looking at the mechanism of anti-TNF agents saying maybe it's working through the Th17 system that has now driven development over the last 5 to 7 years. And what you have now is looking at that Th17 system, which we understood only because of clinical observations, and seeing new drugs being developed to attack that pathway, including molecules that block interleukin-23 alone and molecules that block interleukin-17. And suddenly we have an explosion of new weapons for treating psoriasis that are giving us results that are beyond what we could have expected even 5 to 10 years ago. I bring up a paper that was published, a very nice paper, was published in 2000. By Steve Feldman and his group in Wake Forest. And it said that we shouldn't even try to clear patients with psoriasis. It's too difficult. The data we have at that time suggested that we weren't going to be able to. And that has completely changed, and I think to the betterment of our patients.
Isn't it amazing that some of the first medications that came to market might have a 22% response, and now we have medications that seem to have biological activity in almost everybody?
Yes, I mean, we remember back in treating patients with elefacept with a 21% PASI 75, and we thought that was great. We were very excited about that. Now we're looking at medicines, including medicines that have been described over the last year or so, that are having PASI 100 rates of 40%. It really makes a difference, and this is something I think is really important to think about. We oftentimes make the assumption clearance and getting people completely better is of course better. In fact, you have to prove that. And what is interesting is we have weapons that we can try to prove that with. We have term life quality indices. We have quality of life and other measures. We have symptom indices. And what we found, and data that was presented recently on a medicine called ixekizumab, we're actually able to demonstrate that complete clearance is actually significantly better for patients than even people who have just a little bit of disease left, people who have a PASI 90 response, things that are phenomenal responses that we wouldn't even thought of being able to consistently achieve just a few years ago. But getting that little level to clearance really does make a difference to patients. And I think we have to reevaluate how we go about thinking about psoriasis for our patients to say that maybe we should be stretching to get a little better. One of the things that's really, I think, commonly thought is that there's a disconnect between the way physicians think patient psoriasis is going and how patients think about it. And we tend to think that if patients are a lot better, you can see them and remember how they were before. You think, that's good enough. But what's interesting is patients don't think that way. They really want to be clear. And this data is patients telling us they need to be clear, not us telling them that they need to be clear or not.
And so some of the ways that they've been measuring that response from patients include what kind of measures?
Well, there are a number of measures you can look at. There are quality of life measures. The most commonly used is the Dermatology Life Quality Index, which is applicable to psoriasis. And a measure that is, it's a 30-point measure, and really to determine that someone is not having any impact of the disease would be a measure of 0 or 1 on that scale, and that's generally accepted. There are other things that are out there. There are symptom indices that are being developed. There's one called the Psoriasis Symptom Inventory, which is new. And then there are other measures of specific symptoms like itch that can be measured. And itch, for example, correlates very much to lack of sleep, correlates to life quality. And I think any patient will tell you if they have a little bit of itch that's constant, it drives them nuts. And so all those things are very important in trying to improve the lives of our patient with psoriasis. And so there are a number of different measures that you can use, and more are being developed as we speak, to be able to determine the impact of the disease on patients. And trying to get those where the disease is really not having an impact on patients is really what our goal should be.
When you're assessing patients, not in clinical trials, but in your clinical practice, do you have ways that you measure these easily and efficiently?
I have a very, very efficient system, and I call it the Ken Gordon How Are You Doing scale. And that is, you can find a huge amount of information from a very, very simple question. Just say, how are you? What's going on? How's your skin today? There are people who say you need specific indices in the clinic. I actually disagree with that. A patient will tell you, the key thing is you have to listen. And it takes a few minutes sometimes to let a patient get their information out. What's more, sometimes you have to leave. They say, I'm doing okay. You say, why are you doing okay? Versus, oh, that's fine. If they say, I'm doing really great, you know that the patient's quality of life has improved tremendously. And that's what we're searching for. And so while there are many formal ways of measuring, you can use the Dermatology Life Quality Index in your clinic. I choose not to, because I think that the conversation, the open conversation between myself and the patient is actually more helpful in figuring out, do I need to change up therapy to make the patient better? And that's really what the question is when the patient's in front of you in the office.
Do you want to comment on some of the new medications that have come to market for psoriasis recently and others that are in development?
Sure. There are a number of the next couple of years and sort of the mid-2010s, it's going to be at a very, very exciting time in dermatology. We've already had a couple of medicines come to market recently, a new oral medicine called apremilast, which might not have the highest rate of responses that you'll see, but patients tend to have not a lot of safety issues to it, and it's an oral medication. I think there's an ambition to have oral medicine in the treatment of psoriasis as well as the injectable medications. Recently, the first of the new generation of biologics, a medicine called secukinumab, has been approved for the treatment of psoriasis, and that's the first of the molecules that work specifically through the Th17 pathway. But it's not the last. There are two other molecules which work on the Th17 pathway by blocking IL-17 specifically. One's called ixekizumab, which blocks interleukin-17A. And there's another one called brodalumab, which blocks the receptor for these molecules. So it blocks the IL-17 receptor A, which impacts IL-17 in multiple different levels. Interestingly, there's also a group of medicines that's being developed that blocks interleukin-23 specifically. So a medicine like ustekinumab, which has been a very successful and helpful medicine for the treatment of psoriasis, blocks both interleukin-12 and 23 because they share a common subunit, the P40 subunit. And what's kind of interesting about that is that molecule was designed to block the old model of psoriasis by blocking Th1 responses. But was found over time, it was actually the subunit they share, the P40 subunit, that was important in therapy. And so what we can find now is there are a number of molecules, including a medicine called guselkumab and a medicine called tildrakizumab, which are in their phase 3 trials right now, that actually block the P19 subunit, block IL-23 alone, that have had high levels of impact on patients with psoriasis. And so it might be possible to have a medicine that leaves the Th1 process completely alone, eliminating interferon gamma and Th1s as part of the psoriasis physiology and concentrating only on that Th17 system through interleukin-23 and have great success with it.
It's a very exciting time for our patients who have psoriasis and for the doctors who take care of them. Do you want to talk at all about how our patients are accessing these medicines?
Well, access is always a tricky issue, and the issue is the medicines are very expensive. And biologics in particular have a cost associated with development and production that makes them more expensive in general. It's important to remember, however, that there are lots of means to access medications. Many of the companies will have support systems for the patients with the understanding that these medicines are very difficult to access. That said, not everyone's going to be able to get them. And one thing we sometimes lose sight of, there's some decent medicines out there for psoriasis that aren't particularly expensive in the same context as biologics. Methotrexate's a wonderful medicine for psoriasis. I use it quite a bit in my office. It has some questions associated with it, people with renal failure or people who drink a lot of alcohol. And one could consider people with childbearing potential and the associated problems with methotrexate being category X. But it is an important part of our armamentarium. Many insurance companies are demanding that people start with methotrexate and then move on. I see nothing wrong with that if the patient doesn't have any contraindication to the medicine. Unfortunately, it's probably the only medicine that we're talking about that's inexpensive.
Mm-hmm.
But in that context, if a patient truly doesn't do well with methotrexate, then people will be able to go get access in some other fashion. I want to add one other issue with all medicines that is a point of research that I happen to be very interested in, and that's in looking at how long we have to wait to treat patients before we can say, you know, this isn't going to work. And that's most important, actually, with methotrexate. Because if you look at sort of traditional therapy with methotrexate, you start at a low dose, see if a patient tolerates, see if their blood tests are okay, and then start building up slowly. Well, it turns out in some research that I happen to do with a number of my colleagues, we're actually able to demonstrate that it's really the early response with methotrexate between 4 and 6 and 8 weeks that we'll know, regardless of how we start the treatment, whether the methotrexate is going to work or not. And if you're concerned about tolerability of methotrexate, if you're concerned about side effects with methotrexate, understanding that you might only have to expose a patient for a short period of time before you'll know whether this is something you really want to pursue over time is, I think, very, very reassuring. That's actually the case with many medicines as you mm-hmm. go on. The early responses really do predict what's going to go on with that patient over time. And I think it gives you a level of comfort that you don't have to expose everyone. And you can move on to getting that patient better earlier on without having to have a prolonged period of trial and oftentimes error.
And maybe comment on the role of other systemic therapies for psoriasis, traditional therapies like cyclosporine or acitretin.
Starting with cyclosporine is still a wonderful medicine for psoriasis. It works very, very well. And in the proper patient, it's actually tolerated quite well. Cyclosporine works quickly. It is oftentimes the best medicine to use for a patient who is acutely ill, who has very severe psoriasis. It is still the go-to drug for a patient who has severe psoriasis who is pregnant because of a long history of safety associated with its use in women with post-renal transplant who've gotten pregnant. That said, by the way, it is category C, so people would be upset with it. But there is a clinical history mm-hmm. of the use with it that makes it generally pretty safe in that condition. What's more, in people who are very acutely ill, cyclosporine rate of response is probably not any higher than medicine like infliximab or a medicine like the anti-IL-17s that are coming out. But because the biologics need to get pre-approval, people talk about how long it takes for a drug to work, rapid onset of action. Well, I consider rapid onset of action, the starting point is not when the patient first gets the medication, but in the clinic, the starting point of onset of action is when I decide to use that medication, to the time the patient gets the medication, and then the time it takes to work. Since in my office, it usually takes about 2 weeks to get a biologic, it's a general guess, sometimes faster, sometimes slower. If I have a medicine that's going to work within a month and a patient's very ill, they're not going to get medicine for 6 weeks. They're not going to get better for 6 weeks. Whereas with cyclosporine, if it takes 3 or 4 weeks, they'll get better in 3 or 4 weeks because I can write a prescription and the patient will get it filled. So cyclosporine remains, I think, something that's important in armamentarium, particularly in patients who have very, very significant disease and need to get better quickly, and because of ease of access to the medicine as well. Acitretin, a medicine that I've used for many years, rate of response isn't that great, but it has definitely a purpose. People will use it frequently in palmar plantar disease and pustular disease, for which I found it to be relatively effective, generally well tolerated. Obviously, I never use it in women of childbearing potential. I think that's something that just we shouldn't do. But it is in other populations, especially the elderly, very well tolerated and used significantly. The biggest issue, of course, is nuisance side effects, dry eyes, dry lips, loss of hair, which I think is probably the biggest reason for people to stop the medicine. But in people who don't want to have their immune system compromised in any way, even the mild way that other medicines might do so, it's still a very useful part of our treatment of psoriasis.
Any comments on topical therapies for psoriasis or phototherapy?
Years ago, at the dawn of the biologic era, numerous people got on stage and said phototherapy's dead as a treatment modality with biologics. And I got up and said, I don't think so. I think the phototherapy has stayed. And I think phototherapy remains as a truly effective, safe, and useful mode of treatment for psoriasis. Obviously, it doesn't help people with psoriatic arthritis. And people who are highly inflamed, I tend not to use phototherapy because they tend to Kevnarize significantly. But in people who have chronic plaque psoriasis, if I could start them on phototherapy, all else being equal, I would almost always do so. The biggest problem with phototherapy is the effort associated with it. It takes a lot of time on the part of the patient and the cost associated with this. And that's one of the unfortunate things about what goes on in our healthcare system is that you have a safe, effective therapy that in and of itself is not that expensive compared to other treatment modalities, but yet the way it's paid for makes it more expensive. So patients are getting copays for phototherapy that can be up to $50 or $60 per treatment. That makes it untenable for many, many patients. And what we're doing is losing a very effective and safe and cost-effective treatment for patients because the way it's being paid for, not because it actually costs all that much. Topicals are a mainstay of every treatment protocol for patients. I still use quite a bit, and everyone will have a topical to a certain extent. For the people who have one or two spots left over on a biologic, having a topical that can clean that up really does make a difference for a patient. While we're waiting for medicines to get approved, giving a topical to cut some of the itch and make them feel better is important, and it also instills trust for the patient that you're not taking something and saying, well, we'll just delay your gratification. We're trying to do something right now for you. And so the one real problem we have is that there aren't that many topicals being developed. Our mainstays for topicals remain the same as they've been for many, many years, and that's corticosteroids. And we have some vitamin D derivatives that can be of adjuvant help to topical corticosteroids. Vitamin A derivatives really haven't caught on effectively. If I could do one thing, if I would change the perspective of drug development, we've gotten so much better at treating people with severe disease. I'd like to be able to be better at treating people with more modest disease with topical therapy. And that's one thing we're not doing quite as good a job in development as we are with the sort of more expensive and wider ranging drugs for patients with more severe disease.
Any other things that you want to make sure the audience knows about psoriasis and what's new in psoriasis?
I think only that this is an extraordinarily exciting time for us who work on this area as our research, but also for our patients. And as we learn more about psoriasis in patients, we're going to realize that treating them is of the utmost importance. One lesson that I think is something that we sometimes miss with psoriasis is we so hard try to think about psoriasis as a systemic disease and all the other impact it has on the body. we always have to remember psoriasis itself is a disease that really impacts people. This skin disease impacts people. And making them better with all the new weapons in our armamentarium, including the old ones as well. Phototherapy, topicals, older systemic agents are all important in our ability to make patients better. But the important thing is to try to make patients better. And we lose sight sometimes in all these other things that we're doing day to day, that's really our goal, is to get the patients at a high level of clearance so they can go about their lives and not have impact of their underlying disease.
With that, on behalf of Dialogues in Dermatology, our community, we thank you, Ken. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Michael.
With the recent changes in the understanding of the pathophysiology of psoriasis, the efficacy of targeted medications has improved substantially, and the paradigm of the treatment goal is changing from improvement to full clearance. A great advance in the treatment for psoriasis began with the approval of immunomodulatory biologic medications, which for the first time aimed at antagonizing specific effector cytokines known to be implicated in the pathogenesis of psoriasis. The first of these medications, including etanercept and infliximab, targeted the Th1 cytokine TNF-alpha and achieved impressive rates of improvement in the psoriasis area and severity index, or PASI score, with seemingly little differences in side effect profiles as compared to placebo-treated patients. These were followed by adalimumab, a fully humanized monoclonal antibody targeting TNF-alpha, which demonstrated a similar speed of onset to infliximab, but with sustained efficacy that was shown to be roughly double that of methotrexate at 16 weeks in a head-to-head clinical study. As the understanding of the immunopathogenesis of psoriasis was further refined, ustekinumab was developed to target the common P40 subunit of interleukins 12 and 23. As the first agent to directly target the Th17 inflammatory pathway, ustekinumab showed similarly high levels of clinical efficacy and low incidence of severe adverse events, but had a highly convenient quarterly dosing schedule. Following this success, several new agents targeting IL-17 have been developed and are in various stages of testing. The first to be FDA approved and marketed is secukinumab, a fully humanized monoclonal antibody targeting IL-17A, which in large phase 3 clinical trials demonstrated unprecedented efficacy. In one such study, secukinumab achieved 75% improvement in PASI scores at almost double the rate for etanercept with similar side effect rates when compared head-to-head, and achieved 100% improvement in nearly a quarter of study patients after 12 weeks of treatment. Brodalumab, a humanized antibody against the IL-17A receptor, and ixekizumab, an antibody also targeting IL-17A, have demonstrated similarly impressive results in trials. In addition to the development of these new injectable biologic therapies, a new oral therapy has recently been developed. Apremilast, a twice-daily oral phosphodiesterase 4 inhibitor, was recently approved for the treatment of moderate to severe plaque psoriasis. While the clinical results with apremilast are relatively modest compared to those of the new Th17-targeting injectable biologics, its safety profile and lack of required laboratory monitoring make it an attractive option for patients who desire avoidance of injections or immunosuppression. The advances in the treatment of psoriasis represent a great feat of translational, biomedical, and clinical research and demonstrate the importance of understanding a disease's underlying pathogenesis in order to design targeted and effective treatments. These breakthroughs, however, are increasingly coming at a very high cost. According to a recent commentary, biologic drugs represent less than 1% of all dispensed prescriptions in the United States, but account for 28% of prescription drug spending. As many of the initial biologic medications come off their patent, there will be a rush to generate biologically similar drugs that aim to achieve similar efficacy, but at a substantially lower price.